Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs. They may be authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, web developers. Honestly, they're just anyone who has a wonderful business story to share. And these are people who are excited to freely share their business wisdom as well as tips and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome John Rulin to the show. Radical generosity is the against the grain secret weapon of real influencers, and it will allow you to boost referrals, retention rates, and return on investment like few other strategies. But be warned, gifts with strings attached backfire, and I read that slowly because it's so true. I've had it happen to me, and you know, we all have spidey sense. We know when we're being played. So John says there is a right and a wrong way to give. He has gifted on behalf of everyone from Forbes magazine to the Fortune 500, and his tactics led to appreciative responses and wide-open checkbooks. In his book, Giftology, The Art and Science of Using Gifts to Cut Through the Noise, Increase Referrals, and Strengthen Retention, he shares really wonderful personal stories and data-backed evidence about how this works. He also breaks down how anyone from a mail clerk to the managing director can master the magic of giftology. Sorry, my cat just bit me. Adapt wholeheartedly. It's a true story. That's what happens when you broadcast live. Adapt wholeheartedly to the idea of giftology and reap the rewards of an expanding business and fruitful relationships, professional and personal alike. Sorry, John. He just reached out and just chomped on my finger. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, Denise. This is going to be fun. And I have two of my three daughters have cats, so I'm very well aware of what you're experiencing right now.
Apparently, I was not paying proper attention. It's the only thing I can figure out. I had scooted him off of my notepad, and he wasn't appreciative of that at all. Listen, I have, and his name, I have to tell the audience, is just because it tells you a little bit more about me than you probably need to know, but he's a little black cat, and his name is The Vicar. He has a white priest collar. He's completely black. You can't even see his eyes. He's so dark. And he has a little white priest collar, but he does not take his holy order seriously. He's a holy terror. So that's why he bit me.
Holy terror. I like it.
Yeah.
Cool.
They say we attract the pets that, you know, are the most like us, right? Which is sad.
Very well.
Yeah. So, listen, I have your book, and we're going to talk about a lot of things, but I have your book, and like I was telling you in the green room, when I got this thing, I put pictures of it up on Facebook. It's a beautiful book to start with. I mean, I don't know who did your cover, but it's phenomenal. Then I get this book. It's in this glossy black gift box, and it's got all this wonderful, you know, black and silver confetti-like stuff, and this book is resting in there. I didn't want to open it. It was so pretty. I took pictures of it, and then I put it back in the box. And like I was telling you in the green room, it's, you know, I looked at this thing and went, oh, it's too good to use. It's kind of like that gift you would buy your granny, and she would say, oh, honey, thank you, and then put it up in the closet for later and then be buried in it.
Yeah.
I finally had to just say, no, you have to read the book.
You got to crack
and
it.
I
yeah,
did.
Yeah.
I did, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we did put a lot of effort into the finer details of the cover material and the design and the company that we used to help us kind of get the book to market did a great job, but we also brought in our own marketing team to kind of look over things and just I don't know. It was like my wife would say it's like our fourth child, the book was. So it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And so we wanted to make sure that no detail was too small to do right. So I'm glad it resonated with you.
It's really a lovely book. But once you do crack it, it's like, oh, my gosh. What I would love for you to do is tell the audience a bit about yourself that I might have missed in the introduction. And then I really would like to get in some of the finer points of this book because, well, for a lot of reasons, giftology. I mean, we all have clients that we really want to take care of, and Christmas is around the corner. We definitely need to talk about that. But I love what you're talking about in here about reciprocity. So tell us a bit about yourself, and then, you know, you can tell me all about the book.
Yeah. So I grew up, people assume when they hear high-end gifting and Fortune 500, they assume that my dad must have been a CEO or a top sales, you know, rep for a big company. Or I grew up on one of the coasts, like hanging out at the Harvard Club or whatever else. And that's kind of the opposite. I grew up on a farm in Ohio. I'm a farm boy. I grew up milking goats every morning. So I learned a lot of work ethic and what I didn't necessarily want to do the rest of my life by doing that. And I got really good grades. If you're poor and you get good grades, you're going to go be a lawyer, a doctor. At least in our town, that was the case. And so I thought I'd go make my mom, who was very health-oriented, proud, and go be a doctor. And I ended up interning with a company to help pay for school. And fortunately, that person that was a mentor of mine was my girlfriend's dad at the time, and he was an attorney, and he was always giving things away. Like, he was this radically generous person. And when you're poor and somebody gives a bunch of stuff away, you notice because you're like, he would find things, like random things, like deal on noodles and give everybody, like at church the next Sunday, like a year's supply of noodles, like a semi-load. And I'm like, Paul, that was like $10,000 or $20,000 of noodles. Like, are you insane? Like, that's crazy. That paid for a lot of school. He's like, I know, but did you see the smiles on their faces? And I'm like, yeah, because you gave them a year's supply of noodles. Who wouldn't smile about that? So I remember I interned with a company called Cutco, the knife company, and pitched him the idea of pocket knives. And so I thought he would give pocket knives away to all his clients, or like men, you know, burly guys, insurance company owners, whatever else. And he got this little twinkle in his eye, and he said, what about paring knives? And of course, I'm a 20-year-old guy. Like, I'm like, that's weird. You're going to give grown men paring knives? And he said, you're probably wondering why. I said, yeah, crazy. And he said, because I found that if you take care of the inner circle and the entire family, take care of them, everything else kind of takes care of itself. And so that's
right.
When I had the aha moment.
Uh-huh.
It does now, but at the time it was like, it was like, wow, Paul understands relationships. So I ended up building a business around this kind of concept of generosity. And we'd find out like a CEO of a company we'd want to get a time with, like $100 million insurance company. And I'd find out his wife's name. I'd engrave the name on the knife, you know, and then her name and his name and the family name and the logo. And I'd put on the note, I'd put, carve out 5 minutes for me. I promise it'll be worth your time. And the 60-year-old CEO is expecting like a 50-year-old guy to walk in, and then walks a 21-year-old. And he'd be like, are you here to sell me knives, or what are you here to sell me? And I'm like, no, that has nothing to do with knives. It has everything to do with, I want to help your sales reps build better relationships and open doors with prospects. And so we became Cutco's largest international distributor out of 1.5 million distributors, because we started to apply these principles of generosity. And over time, we built a whole business and other products and other things around it. But the kind of the whole inspiration for Giftology, the book, started 16 years ago as this college kid and observing these things in this small town attorney who just understood relationships at a super deep level. And so that's what we've been applying and using for literally the last 16 years.
So truly your gift was that you were in this man's orbit.
Yes. Yeah. People ask like, what would you be doing if you didn't meet Paul? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe I would go on to be a doctor, or he changed my life forever. There's no question. Now, he won't take any credit. He's like, John, you did all the work. He's like, I may have like cracked open a door to him. I'm like, Paul, like a lot of the core philosophy of what I teach was based upon observing you day to day interacting with people. So yeah, he won't take any credit for it. And that's just Paul's style. Like, even when he got Alumni of the Year at the college that we went to, he turned it down. And the president of the college is like, you can't turn down Alumni of the Year. Like, we're giving you the award whether you show up or not, and it'll be really offensive if you don't show up. Okay,
oh.
I'll show up and take the award. But he's just not a spotlight kind of person. He's just a giver with no strings attached. He's just and he's done it for 50 years. Like, that's just how he does. That's just how he is. So, yeah, very grateful for his example, because I never would have picked up on those things. I not that my family wasn't generous, but we just kind of grew up with a different mindset. Like, that just wasn't buying year supply of noodles and, you know, all these different things. That wasn't in my wheelhouse, that's for sure, until I met Paul.
Well, and I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit that you were actually willing to, you know, be led by his example.
You know, yeah,
out of all
well,
the people that he knows, I'm sure a lot of them were very grateful, but they probably didn't go, oh, and run with it.
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that. I think God's wired me to think, to always look at the angle of things and look at things differently. And so, I think that's probably true. Like, somebody can give you a gift, but it's still your job to unwrap it and take it and do something with it. So, yeah, I think it's, but in my mind, somebody's going to give me an opportunity or a gift or an open door. Like, I'm not going to hesitate to walk through it. And maybe that's, you know, when you grow up with very little, you're like, when somebody does something big for you, you're very appreciative, but you take advantage of it. That's for sure. So
if you're even aware of it, often in, you know, we all see this, and I'm not saying people aren't grateful at all. It just may not be that they're not in the time or the place or the zone, if you will, to go, oh, whoa, this is a true gift. I mean, I'm learning so much here. I'm going to put this to play in my life. They may go back years later and go, oh, that was a neat lesson. Okay, I'm ready for it now. But it sounds like you were there and ready to receive.
Yeah, I probably was. I mean, it's amazing what a little bit of desperation will do. Like, I had a goal to graduate from school debt-free and had started a business before I interned with Cutco, and had nearly escaped getting really hurt two different times. And I was looking for a way to make more than like $6 an hour at McDonald's or Gap. So when you want to pay for a private school experience and, you know, you don't come from money, like, I was hungry. I was motivated. Maybe desperate would be the better word. Like, I was like, and so I literally, when I started with Cutco, I'm like, I hope it'll last 6 weeks. Like, because my family was like, we own the knives, and like, we don't know anybody that can afford them. Like, how are you going to make money selling these crazy knives? And so they look back now and laugh. I mean, my mom's like, you know, I can't believe I told you that this wouldn't, how are you going to last 6 weeks? And now we are, you know, they're still a partner of ours. We're still close friends with the owners of Cutco, you know, 16 years later. So she laughs at herself, you know, and some of the commentary that took place back then. But, there's no question that we recognized the gift and we were prepared to put it into action. That's for sure.
See, I think out of everything that we have talked about and we're going to talk about, that's going to be my takeaway from this. There's going to be others. I know there will, because I have many takeaways from the book, but that is an amazing story. And I'm not sure you understand how amazing it is. So, it's a great story, and I'm so glad you shared it with our audience. But I wanted to ask you, you know, we met through a mutual friend who you gifted, Meredith Bell. She told me this wonderful story of a gift that you sent to her, and I'd like for you to share that with us. But I think that goes back to what we were talking about. You were talking about engraving these things and making them into basically a family artifact. Isn't that, I believe that's what you call it in the book, they become an artifact. They're not just a knife in a drawer. They're now a family possession, a family heirloom.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people use the word token, and I hate that. And I think it's almost a swear word, because it's like an excuse to give a lame gift. It's like, oh, it's a token of our appreciation, which really means like, we didn't put any effort into it, and because you never would call a relationship a token relationship. you know, like relationships are important. And so giving, like if you go like biblical times or even, you know, just go back thousands of years, kings would give other kings gifts based upon the value of the relationship. So if it was worth a lot, if the relationship was worth a lot, they'd give you like 1,000 head of cattle. Like it was a big deal. The gifts really signified a lot. And even now in Eastern cultures, like people will give Rolexes and crazy $100,000 watches because they're like, this relationship's really important to me and I want to show that. And so when you think of it that way, like it really, it goes from being a gift to an artifact. Like hopefully it's something that you'll pass down from generation to generation. And one of my favorite stories that one of my clients shared with me, who's an attorney and now a top speaker, Joey Coleman, he was like, John, like I love the knife. And I'll tell you why I like the knife. He's like, I had a client that the patriarch passed away. There's 3 kids. They inherited $5 million total, and they blew through all of the money over the course of the fighting over one item. And I'm like, what was the item? He's like, people guess like artwork and all these valuable things. He's like, it's a $20 item. They fought. They blew through $5 million to get a $20 item. He's like, I can't make this stuff up. I saw it with my own eyes. And I'm like, what was it? And he said, well, every day after dinner, the dad would play a harmonica. And so for 40 or 50 years, the harmonica came to signify and represented the dad. Like that's who he was. And that was their memory. All these kids that are now grown up, they all wanted the harmonica because of what it represented. It was the artifact of their relationship. And so they blew through it and ended up, because it wasn't determined who would get the harmonica. That wasn't in his will. And he's like, the knife being used every single day, or the knives, whatever, you know, set or one piece, whatever. He's like, that has an opportunity to become an artifact of the relationship. And you know, family gatherings and Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter or Hanukkah or birthdays, like everything centers around food and family and your tools, these knives. He's like, so I love, and he's like, the reason people react so positively to such a weird gift, like a knife as a gift is kind of a weird thing, is because of it just becomes a part of the fabric of that family. And so now to this day, I mean, I send out a couple $100,000 a year worth of gifts to cool people we meet and clients and friends and just people I meet on airplanes. And so Meredith, who's our mutual friend, like she got a hold of the book through, I forget how she got the book, but she was just, you know, sharing it with the world and was just so sweet and so kind. I'm like, I need to send her a couple knives and thank her for carving out the time, because her time's worth hundreds, if not thousands of dollars an hour. What's a few $100 on a small knife set to thank her for giving up her valuable time and just going overboard with her generosity? And so, you know, we engraved them with her name and family name and logo, nothing about us. And, you know, it's her response is similar to most people's responses, which is like, this is one of the nicest gifts I've ever received, which is crazy because it's just a couple of knives, but it's all the details around the packaging, the personalization, the timing, the handwritten note, why you sent it. I'm not asking for anything from her. It was literally just I wanted to honor the relationship. And I think she felt that.
Oh, she did. I mean, she was telling me the story, and we both got a little teary over it. We really did. So that takes me back to mastering reciprocity. She wasn't expecting anything at all from you. She genuinely loved your book. And then, you know, you were the recipient of her generosity, and you wanted to do something kind for her. Now you guys are friends. I mean, you can't do better than that.
No, I mean, I mean, you start to boil things down and realize that that most people, you know, walk around feeling underappreciated. And when you just start appreciating people and helping them and are generous with your time and your resources and your connections or your giving, like, we're all kind of, you know, like we're wired, whether you believe in a God or not, like we're wired, our DNA, like when people go out of their way to help us, most people are wired that you're like, you can't help want to reciprocate. And even more so, it's like when you give your spouse a gift and they're not asking for anything in return, they just love you and they want to honor you. They want to just, you know, like just love on the other person. You want to reciprocate even more. Like it's like, I have a number of friends and clients, it's like we almost try to outgive each other because we're just value the relationship so much, and the other person's a giver, and so it's just, it almost becomes addictive, at least in my mind, and I think a lot of people's minds, like they start to do it, and like, wow, this is it. Like, it, you don't need anything back. Like, just the feeling of being able to do that and blow somebody's mind with your generosity is just, is kind of gift enough, and oftentimes it does come back, you know, a hundredfold in some way, shape, or form over, you know, years or decades. And I think a lot of times people, they put strings attached and they're hoping for something immediately, and they ruin the gift. They ruin the whole process of what it could really do. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about that. Do you have any examples about exactly that topic?
Like ruining the gift?
Yeah. Well, you know, you give it, and I see this all the time. So, well, you know, I did such and such, and I didn't get anything back. Or I went on their radio show, and they didn't even say thank you, and I'm not going to do that again. It's like, why are you being so petty? I see pettiness in it rather than it was a gift for you to go on that show. They talked with you. They've helped you out. Maybe they just didn't have a moment right then and there to call you back and say thank you, but it's probably coming. Get over yourself. I get a little impatient with people. Can you tell?
Well, it's easy to forget that, like, they just shared you with their audience. It's like a lot of times people pay for advertising, and they just endorsed you, gave you their time and energy and all the years, in some cases decades, of building up this tribe, and they shared you with that person. Like, I send, you know, oftentimes I'll send gifts to different people that have had me on their show because I'm like, yeah, it was great. I hopefully I went on and delivered value. But I think anytime you can look for, you know, from the other person's perspective and say, wow, they're being really generous, I think it's amazing when you do the gift and you don't have to do the gift, when you, you know, it's not like the obligatory gift. It's amazing how impactful that is. And we have people reach out to us all the time, like, John, we want to do gifts. So I'm like, well, why do you want to do the gifts? Like, well, we're going to give this gift, and they better give us a referral. We're going to ask for referrals. So I'm like, do you really think that it's with realtors or financial advisors, and not the good ones, the ones that are really smart understand, like, you give the gift, you pour into people, like, it will come back. Like, if you give it enough time, enough of a runway, and view relationship building as a marathon, you're good. But we do have people reach out, like, yeah, we're going to send the gift, and then we're going to ask for a referral. But I'm like, you're actually going to spend money to insult the other person. They're going to feel like it was a bait and switch opportunity versus
the
gift.
They're being set up. Set up. And they're going to know it, by the way. We do have spidey sense.
Of course. Yeah. When you give a gift and you don't ask for anything, and people are like, they're kind of they're almost on edge a little bit at times if they've had that happen before, and then you don't ask for anything, you're like, what's the catch? Like, you'll sometimes get that question. Like, there's no catch. Like, thanks for who you are. Like, thanks for being who you are. Thanks for, you know, what you've done in the past. Like, there's no ask. Oh my gosh. Okay. And the guard goes down, and but we definitely get those requests from people, like, they don't understand, you know, they're more, Adam Grant's book, give and take, they're more either, you know, matchers or takers. If they want to send a gift frankly, I think some people just, they think that they're doing the right thing. They've never been taught, you know, proper gifting, because there's no, like, I don't know of any other book that talks about gifting, and there's definitely not a class in MBA programs like, this is how you leverage, you know, generosity. Like, there's no gifting class. So most people, they confuse gifting and promotional material, or gifting and marketing, and they're different. They're very different.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I love what you just said about leveraging generosity. That almost sounds like an oxymoron, but it's not.
I think it's one of the most powerful. And if you read, like, I mean, there's studies on it. Like, if you read the book Influence by Robert Cialdini, like, there's been instances where, like, countries have given to other countries, and, like, 100 years later, when the country needed help, like, that entire country didn't forget who helped them when they were, in a horrible spot, and they're stepping up, even though, even out of like sacrificial giving, like where they, the country, it was like, I think it was like Ethiopia or some country that really couldn't afford to help. But because somebody, one of the other countries had helped them 100 years earlier, they reached out and like, and gave, it was in the millions of dollars, and reciprocated, just because like generosity is a really powerful, it just hits us at a core level that I think a lot of other things, you know, there's so much noise with advertising and digital stuff and tactics that, that people forget, like we're still human beings and we make decisions based upon how we feel, like our emotions are really important, and we may justify with logic, but at the end of the day, like the emotional element has been, like nobody likes transactional business isn't very fun, even in 2016. So I think the, yeah, giving is very, very powerful, no question.
And generosity doesn't really have a shelf life, as you just proved. I mean, it's something that it may take a while for it to kind of settle in. It may be years before you really understand what that gift was all about. But once you get it, you're like, oh, okay, how can I be a part of this? Now how can I give? Yeah, it just depends on where you are in your life, I think. But sooner or later, I think it really does kind of hit you and you go, okay, you know, I've had so many gifts in my life, truly. And some of them were a long time ago, but I still remember them. And it may have just have been a conversation in a grocery store, but they really were a gift, and I do recall them. And I still, you know, kind of abide by the rules that I learned at that time.
Yeah, people talk about evergreen content. Like, generosity is one of those things that I think is one of the most evergreen things on the planet. From a, you know, you plant those seeds, sometimes they sit dormant, sometimes, like, you don't know what's going to happen, but it just comes back to that long term. You know, are you in this for the long term? Are you viewing relationships like a 50-year marathon, or are you viewing it like, what am I going to get in the next five minutes or 5 months? And if you look long term enough, it all comes out, and everybody wins. That's a beautiful thing. Like, it's not a I win you lose or you lose I win, like that. Everybody ends up better off for it. So
I think it has to be something you experience before you really go, oh, I get it.
I think
it has to be a gift that's given to you, or multiple gifts that are given to you that you just went, oh, okay, cool, you have a nice day now. And then later on you went, oh, darn it, I missed that opportunity. But, you know, to just say, hey, thank you so much, it's never too late to go back and say thank you, by the way. But I think if you look at pretty much everything that's going on in your life during the day, you can find little pockets of generosity in you and in other people. But I think you have to look for them sometimes.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. There's definitely, yeah, people sometimes when they read the book, they think they're only thinking about the tangible gift, but it's like the five love languages. Like, there's words of affirmation, there's acts
book.
Of service.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book, and it's the five different ways that you can show love or you know, generosity, giving. Like, there's different words to describe it, but you know, the a handwritten note can be really powerful to communicate, you know, generosity and appreciation to people. There's no question that that's just a massive. I think that you definitely have to look for it, and I think the more that you give it and do it, the more, like, I call it like the gratitude muscle. Like, the more you work that muscle, the more you're better at giving and doing it, but you're better at picking up on it in other people as well. I think, one of the things that I'm a big believer in, the 5-minute journal, I don't know if you're familiar with that book or not, but it's basically 5 minutes of waking up every morning and starting the day and ending the day about thinking about what you're grateful for. And the more you become in tune with that.
My last guest mentioned exactly that. You talk about synchronicity. Okay, keep going.
No, I was just going to say that more you can work that gratefulness muscle and become aware of it, the more, one, you're inspired to want to show that gratefulness in different ways to other people, but you also pick up on it and have more grace, I think, for other people, and pick up on the small things and not, like, I better get something out of this, I'm doing this kind of thing. To the point where I mean, I have people that will reach out and be like, "Child, I just still love the gift that you sent me, and I can't remember what I sent them. I don't even remember sending them a gift." And to me, it's a good thing because it means I'm not keeping score. Like, I don't even have record, at least not mentally. Maybe in our CRM or something, we have a little note of like, "Hey, we sent such and such," just to like, so we don't send them the same thing twice or whatever else. But in general, I think it's a good thing when you can say, like, a year later, like, "I don't know who I sent gifts to this past year because I didn't do it to get something. I did it because I wanted to communicate something to that person." So, but I think the 5-minute journal is a simple step in, like, just practicing on a day-to-day basis, at least writing down. And then I'm hopeful to write. I'm planning on putting a journal together that we'll talk a little bit more about taking action on things, but I think it all starts with, you know, that gratitude and being grateful.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to ask you, and thank you for sharing that with me. It's, I really appreciate you doing that. I wanted to talk about how you learn how to gift. My problem, I'll be honest with you, has always been receiving. That's always been a struggle for me, but I'm getting better about it. But finding, it's tough for people. Have you noticed that? Like, oh, they gave me something, now what do I do? You know, but, yeah, that's probably a whole nother conversation. But you talk about laser targeting, who to give a gift to, and when to use thrift, because you also talk, this is actually a two-part question, I think, you also talk a lot about very expensive and very exclusive gifts, but right now I wanted to ask you about how do you target, you know, when you're, let's just use me as a for instance. I have a lot of people on my virtual assistant team and my web development team. I want to gift them with something. They don't expect anything massive, but I want to give them something really pertinent to them. So how do you go about targeting each individual or each company or each person?
So I think the a lot of what we teach is that, one, it will depend upon the level of the company or the person. Like, oftentimes, the higher up, you know, the food chain or the higher level of the company, like, it's hard to get that executive something that they're going to use or love because they have either resources or whatever else. But oftentimes, like, going back to Paul's example of taking care of the inner circle, like, I treat the assistant, the spouse, and the kids like gold, because oftentimes they get the worst part of being in business. Like, the trips away, the golf outings, all that kind of stuff doesn't involve them. And so I think sometimes just appreciating and recognizing that they have other people in their life and giving them something that includes their spouse or their assistant is a big deal. So I think another thing is that most of the time when people send gifts in business, they put their logo on it and they make the gift all about them. And a gift should be all about the recipient. So if you don't have the ability to personalize every single gift, which, you know, one of the challenges of personalizing a gift is if that person, maybe they're into golf, for instance. Well, if everybody knows they're into golf, they get, like, golf stuff all the time. And so sometimes even personalizing it to a hot button for them may backfire because they already have 5 pairs of golf shoes and all the golf clubs they could ever use in 10 lifetimes. So I like to do things that are a little bit unique, a little out of the ordinary. I like things that are practical. I like things that include the spouse. But they have to be things I can personalize to them with at least their name or initials or something. So it was made just for them, not for the masses. If they own a business, I'm going to personalize it to their logo because there's probably a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that brand. And you know, we love to see our own name on things, and we love to see our own brand because that we put a lot into that. So I think for your team, for instance, I don't know if most of them are married or not married, but I think doing something for, you know, them and their spouse would go a long way. I think doing gifts at times when it's not expected or it's not out of obligation. So ironically, you know, like from a faith perspective, Christmas is a really big season for me, but I don't send one gift to clients, prospects, suppliers, employees, anybody between Thanksgiving and Christmas, because it's the most noisy. People are, you know, planning parties, year-end business. They're stressed out. Family's in town. Like, I want to give a gift out of, like, generosity and do it as a just because and do it, like, in the middle of March. So it's weird for a gifting expert to say don't buy Christmas gifts in business, but don't buy Christmas gifts. If you want your money to be impactful, and we all want ROI, don't send. And we've been interviewed as like the Grinch who's trying to kill Christmas, because most companies make all of their money off that time of year. They don't really care if it has impact. They just want you to buy from them. And I think that's a big differentiator for us, is like, I want you to spend, I want to spend your money the same way I'd spend my own, which means I'm not going to tell you to send Christmas gifts because I think it's a waste of time. So that small gift that would mean nothing at Christmas in the middle of July might mean a lot, because it's the only package they got that wasn't a bill that month. That's maybe some food for thought for you as you look to appreciate your key relationships and your employees and your staff and your IT people and people that you don't have to gift, but if you are going to do it, you want it to be impactful.
And I actually really like what you're saying, because I would rather bonus my teams when they've done, anybody on my team, when they've done a stellar job and they've gotten me over a big hump, I'll bonus them. I'll bonus them at midnight. I would much rather do that than a kind of an obligatory Christmas gift. I really would.
Yeah, the obligatory Christmas gifts is, and a lot of times people send gifts or do gifts or parties when an employee leaves. Why would you throw a party when somebody comes on board and make them feel welcome? Like,
I know.
Why not celebrate? Why wait till 5 years? Why wait till somebody's been there for 5 years before you appreciate them? Like, if somebody's come on board, like, and they're joining my team, I want them to feel welcome, so I do a gift then, and I don't wait for, five-year, 10-year, 15-year anniversaries to do anything cool for our staff. Like, we want them to feel the love, and we actually gift our suppliers. People were buying, millions of dollars worth of product off of. We send them gifts, and they're like, you're buying all this stuff from us. Why are you sending us a gift? Like, this is unbelievable. I'm like, because I don't have a business without suppliers, and you're an important relationship, and I want you to feel appreciated. Frankly, I want you, if I'm in a pinch, I want you to be willing to like step up and be a partner of mine, because I really view you as a partner, not as just a supplier to beat down on price. And people are like, seriously? And I'm like, well, when I tell you like I want something at this price, what do I always say? I'm always like, can you make money at this price? If you can't, then just tell me and we'll raise the price, because I want you to be in business for a really long time and I want to be your favorite client. And people are like, are you serious? And then we start sending them gifts, and they start to, over time, they realize like we try to walk our talk even with how we treat our suppliers. So it sounds crazy, but it goes a long way.
No, it doesn't sound at all crazy. I've operated that way for many, many years. I mean, I had a small business in town some years ago, brick and mortar business. And honestly, I think I was the first person in my little area that said, no, I don't have it, but let me call this other person and see if they have it. And it started this whole kind of round robin where we would refer each other to different shops and say, I think I saw that over there. Go down the street. It's 4 blocks on the right. It just makes sense to do that instead of going, oh, it's all mine. It's not yours. It's just not. And I never understood that kind of clutching everything to your chest mentality.
Most people have that scarcity mindset of can't talk well of anybody else, it's going to take away from you. You don't realize like shining the light on other people, it ends up coming back, and they shine it back on you even more. It's crazy.
They really do. One of the things that I'm looking at chapter 22 is, will it be visible? And I'm going to read the first little paragraph. Your gift should be a conversation starter, something that by its very nature will keep you on top of someone's mind. Your best gift for return on investment is something that's used daily versus only a dozen times a year. And this is me talking, not in your book, but I wanted to make a point. You said something about putting your logo on a gift. You want to find out what happens to those things? Go to any garage sale. Truly.
Garage sale, Goodwill.
Think about it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they, they pick something that maybe is going to get used, but they end up picking something that's mediocre level at best. So it doesn't replace the item that you gave. And then they put their logo on it, which makes it even worse.
Yeah, because
so, yeah,
who's
going like,
to put that on the dinner table? I mean, really?
No, but nobody. I mean, not anybody classy anyway. I mean, it's so, yeah, it's amazing how just the finer details. I mean, we've seen people, you know, give out Rolexes, and you think, like, how could I ever give a Rolex wrong? It's a $10,000 watch. But people put the logo on a white face, like Domino's put their logo on a white face of a watch. And so people traded in the Rolexes, because even if you work for Domino's, do you really want a Domino's logo on your Rolex? And the answer oftentimes is no, unless you founded the company. But if I give somebody a Rolex, do you think they're ever going to forget where that came from? Like, in their subconscious mind, like, do you think they're, even if they consciously forget, which I don't think they ever would, but people give such lame gifts, they have to put their logo on it because it's a lame gift. If it's a really world-class gift, people will never forget where it came from. Like, it's just, it creates a memory point that's hard to get rid of.
Exactly. And to your point about the Rolex, I was a jeweler for a long time, and once or twice in my career, I saw people come in with Rolexes that had been branded by the company, or, you know, some, they'd gotten it somewhere and they wanted to know what it was worth. Not much. Seriously, not much. You've got somebody else's name on top of the Rolex. What do you think? It's just, and they were deeply
awesome.
Disappointed.
I need to use that. Can I use that quote? Can I say,
of
like,
course.
I was on an interview and a jeweler, like, what's it worth? Not much. Those two words say it all. Those two words say it all. That's fantastic.
And talk about disappointed, but it's a Rolex. Yeah, but they ruined it. Look at this. That's not coming
out.
Yeah.
They defaced it.
It's
like putting graffiti on it.
They defaced it. That's exactly right. So, I mean, it was a nifty-difty gift, but Rolexes don't keep good time anyway, but it just had no real value. They don't. I've had one. They don't.
No, I know. I have one on my wrist right now too that somebody gave me as a gift that they fortunately didn't put their logo on it. But you're right. It doesn't keep time at the same level as otherwise. They don't. It's more of a status symbol, or you're paying for the the fancy names. That is for sure. So
that's exactly right. Well, in your book and other writings, you give a lot of examples. We're talking about Rolexes, so let's just go off on this tangent. You give a lot of examples of very expensive and very exclusive gifts. And one of the ones that, it was on your Facebook page yesterday, I think, it was a handmade Italian umbrella that you posted about.
Yeah.
I want one, but I'm not going to pay for one. Can you share some ideas that small business owners could use, you know, that are maybe, and this actually comes from Meredith, by the way, Meredith Bell. She wants to know if you could give some small business owners ideas that would fit a smaller budget per client but still stand out and be memorable like everything else you do.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, people would say, like, how could I afford to do, you know, gifting, you know, either with us doing it or on their own? And I asked them, I said, well, do you ever take people out to dinner or ball games or you know, go to a trade show or whatever? It's like, oh, yeah, we do that all the time. I said, well, what do you spend on a really nice dinner out with a client and a nice, you know, bottle of wine? Or if you go to really good ball game tickets or go to a really nice golf course, like, I don't know, a few hundred dollars at least. I'm like, okay, well, and that's on a, you know, a consumable experience. I said, well, what if you were able to do that for, take that same amount of money and gave them something that they'd have for the next 10 or 20 or 50 years, do you think that would have an impact? I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. I said, well, most of our gifts aren't Rolexes. Most of our gifts are, you know, somewhere between $100 and $500 per gift. So it's, they're classy, they're first class, they're personalized, they're nice, but it's not like asking somebody to go spend, you know, $10,000 on a Louis Vuitton purse. Like, it's things that are useful and classy, but they're not, but they don't look like you're trying to buy or bribe somebody. They're just, they're thoughtful artifacts. And so that's kind of our rule of thumb. 80% of our gifts are in that realm. I'd say maybe some of them get up to $1,000. But if you pick your top, let's just say you pick your top 10 clients, because a lot of times people are like, well, we have we have 100 clients. So I'm like, well, is it the 80-20 rule? Like 20 of them do 80% of the business? They're like, yeah, probably. That's about right. I say, well, take all of your, like, your resources, whether it's $1,000 or whether it's $10,000 or $100,000, whatever the number is, divide that into your top 20. Don't try to do 100 gifts because you're going to blow through your money and you're going to have to give a $20 gift versus maybe if you just pick your top 10 or your top 20, you could spend $100 or $200. So like that umbrella, for instance, like everybody's received an umbrella and most of the time people give an umbrella. It's like a $5, $10, $20 trinket and the logo's on it. Well,
and it breaks the first time you pull it out of your purse. Yep.
Yeah, you
actually
need it.
And there's nothing worse than standing in a rainstorm and the darn thing is broken. So now you hate the company that gave it to you.
Yeah, now you're like cursing them. Now you spent money to actually have like negative impact. Like, so our thing is rather than buying, you know, 500 umbrellas, why don't you buy 20 of them? And like in this case, like that umbrella is a $275 umbrella. And people are like, oh my gosh. I'm like, well, have you ever paid $275 on dinner? Like, yeah, we've done that before. It's like our business cards. Like people freak out over our business cards because they're metal and they're $3. And I'm like, well, have you ever spent $3 on a cup of coffee? Like, yeah, we do that every day. I'm like, do you think anything of it? Like, no. I'm like, well, a cup of coffee, like, is that making any money? Like, no. Like, well, the $3 business card, like, stands out hands and, you know, like way above beyond anything that anybody's ever seen before. And so I'm like, it's not always spending the most money. When you're a small business, you need to take whatever resources you have. And I want to play in a blue ocean where nobody's playing. So most people would look at a $275 umbrella and be like, that's the craziest thing in the world. But I gave it to a guy who is in marketing and social media and is very, you know, is an influencer in St. Louis. Has a, you know, multi-million dollar company, works with like brands like Fireball Whiskey and big national brands. And for him, like an umbrella, like he probably got a closet full of umbrellas, but now he's going to use my umbrella, you know, all the time. And he's going to tell the story of getting it as a surprise and the little mustaches on it because he's a big mustache guy. And so for $275, I have something that will be a trigger in his mind for maybe the next 10, 20, 30 years. And that to me is money well spent when you think about the cost per impression. So I look for things that most people go really cheap on, like business cards or umbrellas or knives or whatever. And if people are going really cheap, I don't try to go like 1 or 2% better. I try to go like 3,000% better. And I found that like my business card at $3 allows me to not have to spend like $10 or $20 on a brochure because everybody has fancy brochures and most people end up throwing them away. But and the same thing
it's just litter.
Like most,
really, it is.
It's just litter. Yeah. It's like you want to be a green company, stop, you know, printing stuff that people are going to throw away or use as toilet paper. Like it doesn't make any sense. So I try to focus on the things where everybody goes cheap. I try to do it. And you know, like, you could spend, you know, thousands on an umbrella if you really want to go really crazy. So I think there's a happy medium of I want it to be world class and the umbrellas are just beautiful and they're hickory and Rolls Royce leather on the handle and, you know, $275. People, it makes me laugh. They're like, oh, I'm not going to give umbrellas. I'm going to give iPads away. And I'm like, well, how much are those going to cost? I don't know, $500 or $600 a piece. Like,
yeah.
Do you think the people you're giving an iPad to, do they already have an iPad? Maybe, yeah. Yeah, probably. So you're giving them something that has a shelf life of maybe 12 months that they already have that car dealerships are giving away as test drive for a test drive, and you think that's going to make them feel special because they're going to re-gift that, and they're not going to think of you.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's going to go to the grandkids, stocking stuffer.
So often, you know, and so they're like, I would never spend $275 on an umbrella, but I'd spend $600 on a piece of technology that's going to get regifted. I'm like, that's not really good sense. But everybody latches on and wants to be like, feel like, well, they're giving Apple, that's a good idea. Well, it's actually, I think, in our opinion, I have a list of the 10 worst gifts to give. And Apple's on there because it's become over-gifted. And it's not, if you can go buy it at Walmart, it's probably lost some of its cachet and specialness in most people's minds. Now, there are times where I'll break
Good
my own
point.
Rule. Like if you can find it anywhere, then it loses its uniqueness. Now, there's times, like, I had a pro sports team executive who was kind of like a middle manager. She's really sweet, referred us a ton of business, and she broke her iPhone and was still using it. It had like a cracked screen. Well, I went in with another friend of mine who's also a provider for them, and we surprised her at this conference in front of everybody and gave her a new iPhone. And you would have thought I like gave her a brand new car. Like, she was jumping up and down and just squealing with delight and so happy. And it cost us probably $400 or $500 to buy this phone because I have some friends that refurbish iPhones. In that case, I broke my own rule and gave Apple, but I knew for her that was a really important thing. There was a need there that she was not meeting. But 9 times out of 10, you give somebody that iPad or the whatever, it's like they don't even – you spend all that money ineffectively. So I think small business owners can be really – if they take a step back, they narrow their list down, they do the gift at a different time, not at Christmas, if they include the spouse, if they personalize it, if they make it practical, if they do all those things, like they're going to be head and shoulders above their entire competition because most people are sheep and most people follow the same playbook, and it's not that. So that would be my small business owner pep talk.
There are two things that just popped into my head. I love that you're consulting with your clients and not just taking orders. You know, so many people, oh, God, we got a big order coming in. We've got 1,000 sippy cups going out, and they're red. Oh, goody.
Yeah.
But you're
no
not
order
that.
Taking
you're really
here.
Trying to, yeah, yeah. And I love that. But you also mentioned, you know, you're taking care of the family. When you're gifting, you're considering, you know, the business, the family, you know, everything that goes on in that, because it's very difficult for business owners, for entrepreneurs, for solopreneurs to separate life and business. We just can't do it. You know, people like to pretend they can. They can't. It's a lie. So I'm so happy that you're kind of taking care of that whole holistic kind of approach. What about kids? I mean, you have a chapter in your book about being very careful about gifting when kids are involved.
Yeah, well, I think that especially if you have a close, you know, probably a third of the gifts that we do are for prospects, for clients. So like they have their dream 100 list. And I think, you know, you can gift the assistant, you can probably gift the spouse, but people are pretty protective of their kids. So unless you have a close personal relationship where you know the family or you've met the kids before, then I think that that gifting, you know, the kids is a little, it can just come across as a little bit too stalkerish. Now, if they put a post out about their, you know, about having a new baby or whatever else, and you have a good relationship, but you obviously haven't met the kid yet, I think that doing a really cool over-the-top baby gift can be really fun and impactful. And, you know, if you make it personalized to them and their name and the date and the pounds and all that kind of stuff, you know, I know that some people have sent us gifts that, if they're really nice and practical and useful and they're personalized, like my kids still have them to this day, you know, 5-6 years later. And one of them came from the former CEO of Success Magazine, Darren Hardy. He sent, you know, this cool blanket. I think it was from like Pottery Barn or Williams-Sonoma or something. And it was really high end and it had her name on it. It's super soft, over the top soft. And it's my daughter's favorite blanket. So every time I see that blanket, I can't help but think of Darren and Georgia Hardy because of that. And so, but I think that you can cross that line if you don't really have a close relationship and you start gifting the kids, it can look a little bit too forced, in our opinion. And so I would just, you know, say tread lightly there unless you have a close relationship.
Well, that makes sense. In particular, these days, people need to be careful with their children. I'm on page 122 of Giftology, and you're talking about that harmonica. And I wanted to ask you at the top of the show, couldn't they just work out a sharing arrangement? You have it a third of the year, I'll have it a third of the year, you have it a third of the year, and we'll just visit the darn thing. $5 million
to like a trophy.
That's astonishing.
I know, but people, you know, like it comes back to that emotional attachment to people make decisions based upon emotion. And And when you know, sibling rivalry, I don't know the family, but I mean, you can see like when people are going through a divorce or anything, you know, oftentimes people don't think rationally in those situations, and their judgment gets very clouded. They're not thinking logically. They're thinking emotionally and feeling like they're being taken advantage of or whatever else. I don't know the particulars of that situation, but yeah, you'd think like you could treat it like the Stanley Cup or something. Like they trade, you know, pass it around and leverage it, but
exactly.
they definitely did not.
It's a sad story.
Sad.
It's a very sad story. But that, I'm on page 22, and I feel sorry for them, I do, but I'm kind of laughing because, you know, people are dumb nuts every once in a while, and the attorneys didn't do them any favors either, obviously. But then we go to the next chapter, is it universal? And you know, we've been talking about personalized gifts, but what about when you're gifting for multiple people? I mean, it's unlikely that you can handpick just one unique item for each individual recipient, so what do you do in that case?
Well, I think that one of the reasons the knives have worked really well, I like things that center around the hub of the house. Like, you know, people break bread, you know, whether you have a $50,000 house or a $5 million house, like entertaining and hosting and eating is about as universal as it gets for human beings. And so the knives and some of the wine tools that we use, they're all best-in-class, first-class items, but they're things that you could give to a 30-year-old or you could give to a 60-year-old. You know, we have these really cool canteens that we work with that are high-end that, you know, they're not inexpensive. They're $40, $50. But when you get one, you're like, wow, I didn't even know I wanted one of these, but this would be great for coffee or smoothies or a bottle of wine on a picnic or whatever. And so I like things that that are, you know, just universally accepted. Even like a portfolio, you know, portfolio would be a great gift, but most people give one imported from China with a logo slammed on it the size of a softball. And so we do portfolios that are, you know, they're heirloom quality where you'll probably pass it down to the next generation. And they're $200, $300, which isn't inexpensive, but it's the only portfolio you'll probably ever use because it's that, it's nice, it's classy, it's personalized with your initials. And so you take something that's very kind of boring, and we've sent, you know, like one of my biggest clients, I remember sending it to her and her husband, and she was like over the moon. Like they run a pretty significant company, have hundreds of employees, and she was just like, this is the nicest portfolio I've ever seen. Like the detail, like the stitching, the immediate, she's like, I want to buy 10 of them. Here's the 10 people I want to buy them for. And I'm like, I didn't send it to you so you'd order them. Like I sent it to you because I know you love quality and I know you, like, I figured it'd be something that you guys would really appreciate and use. And like, she's like, my husband never carries a portfolio and he's now carrying this around because he just loves the feel of it. So you can, if you do a universal gift and you do it right, like one of our new potential suppliers is a guy who makes mugs and he takes 3 hours to hand make out of clay these mugs. They're like $200 mugs. And I've always joked, I'm like, we don't carry coffee mugs, but coffee mugs would be a great gift if you gave the best one on the planet because most people drink coffee or tea. And most people give a $5 mug. Maybe if they're going crazy, it's a $10 mug. And I'm like, if I ever gave mugs, it'd be $50 mugs. Well, this guy heard a podcast interview. He's like, and he's faith-based guy. And he's like, God told me I'm supposed to be a gift maker. I'm not mass producing things. I'm supposed to make gifts. And he made a mug for me and my wife that has carved into it our story, like things about us and our family. And he drove 8 hours to deliver them. His name's Brad.
Oh.
And these are a couple hundred dollar mugs. They are the most unbelievable. I'm like, Brad, I don't know if we'll be able to work together because if I share this with some of our clients, they're going to want like 100 of them in at 3 hours a piece, like it's going to take like half the year to make these things. And he starts laughing. He's like, we'll figure something out. Maybe I have to start hiring some people to help make them. But it's literally like he took something that's very universal, like a mug, and made it into something that is unlike anything else on the planet. And because of that, like when I drink coffee now, like it goes into that mug because there's no other mug like it on the planet. Which is just simple, but It's so simple but so powerful.
I would love for you to send me a picture of those mugs.
I can absolutely do that. That's.
I would love to see those.
They're works of art. They're amazing. And he guarantees them for life. So if they somehow ever break, they're dishwasher safe and everything else, he's like, I'll replace it for free. I'll remake your mug, which is just insane. So, So something simple and utilitarian, universal like a mug, now is may become a new line for us to be able to offer to clients, because not in obviously mass crazy quantity, but for the person who has everything, $200 mug fits the bill, I think.
And it really becomes, it can become your harmonica. Just be careful with them. Make sure that you designate where those darn things are going.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
John, I have loved chatting with you, but I have to tell you what I admire most about you and your story is just how much passion and enthusiasm you have for what it is that you're doing. I mean, it just comes off of you in waves.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I feel like, I've been given a lot, and, when you have an opportunity, like when your business, like my 5-year-old, almost 6-year-old daughter, like when she describes what her dad does, she's like, my dad helps people love on people. Like that's how, that was her description. And like, I get to do that every single day. Like I get to create experiences with gifts for our clients and our clients' clients and our clients' employees. And like, hopefully inspire people to be more generous in their own personal lives or business lives. So it's definitely rewarding and never gets old seeing like the ripple effect and the impact of being able to do this for people. And not saying we're perfect at it or we don't have our bad days, or there's not days with being an entrepreneur where you're like, gosh, like is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? But the vast majority of the time, like I wake up and feel very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing and have the opportunity to help the clients that we work with and to share this kind of radical generosity message with hopefully the world. So.
Well, I really appreciate you being with me here today. I mean, it's an amazing story. I've loved chatting with you. I'm just sitting here happy. I've got a big smile on my face. I got bit by my cat. I'm still happy. So I'm so glad. I'm going to have a talk with him when we're done, by the way. But it's just, he's going to get his little butt smacked. But thank you. I mean, thank you for the book. I love the book. I still have the box. I have to tell you, in my office, I have been reading since I was 3 years old. My mother would let me sit with a bunch of books. And when I went to kindergarten, my teacher asked my mother, she said, who taught Denise how to read? And Mom said, no one. And she said, well, how come she can read? And my mother said, well, we didn't tell her she couldn't, which I thought was brilliant. So I have been reading since I was 3-4 years old, and I have books everywhere. But in my office, and there is a point, I'm getting to it, in my office, the books that are in here are business-related, and they're all from people that I have, interviewed, or they're friends of mine, or they're clients. And these are not just random books. And I've got them stacked higgly-piggly everywhere, and I pull them out because a lot of them are reference books for me. Your box is on the shelf. I had to clear a spot to put your gift box with the book in it on the shelf. I don't know why it impacted me so greatly, but I was like, oh, it's so pretty. And I wouldn't throw the box away, and I'm not going to reuse it. It's staying there on the shelf.
And it's not like the box costs hundreds of dollars, but most people, they think a bubble envelope is enough to, well, it doesn't matter. Well, I don't know. I think the little things kind of do matter, because most people don't put it.
Yeah, it did. And I called Meredith and said, look what I got, woohoo! And she said, oh, my goodness. I love the book, and I've really appreciated you taking the time to be with me here today. And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. So everybody else, the show, John, tell everybody, I'm so sorry, we went over a little bit, we're still recording. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, so they can go to, I mean, they can obviously find Giftology at Amazon. It's on Audible and they can, you know, Kindle and all those sorts of things. They can go to Giftologybook, allinword.com. And they can also, I did create a PDF of, you know, if you are going to do gifts before Christmas and before Thanksgiving and you want to do it on your own, I created the 10 worst gifts to give. And if you go to giftologybook.com/Denise, you can get a free download and you can get the 10 worst gifts to avoid giving this, whether it's this year or next year or whatever else. I mentioned one of them being Apple is on the list, but there's 9 others. It just gives you a little bit, like maybe some parameters or bumper bowling kind of thing to keep you down the middle of the lane when you are doing gifts, and just some things to kind of avoid and think about. So, yeah, and obviously Twitter, you can go to at Rulin or I'm on Facebook and some of the other social media stuff. But, go to giftologybook.com and I'd love to get everyone's feedback on the book.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm going to go download that myself as soon as we get off the phone. John, thank you again. And for everybody who was listening in, they're now, the chat room is now closed, but the show will be available in about 30 minutes. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and John Rulin. I will see you next week. John, thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.